Will reading Harry Potter books turn your daughter into a witch or your son into a Satanist? Don't go away. Catholic Parents Online is next. Hello, and welcome to Catholic Parents Online, a program where we explore the issues Catholic parents face while raising their children. I'm your host, Colleen Perfect. Harry Potter is in the library, Buffy the Vampire and Sabrina are on TV, and Pokemon cards are the thing to have. The magical and the mysterious are very big these days, but these books, shows, and cards may become more than parents bargain for if it's taken too far. Joining me today to discuss the potential dangers of these fascinations with the supernatural is Father Robert Altier, a priest with the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis. Father Altier, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on, Colleen.
You're welcome. Father, I wanted to ask, first of all, why should Catholic families, or all families for that matter, be concerned about such things as Harry Potter, the Ouija board, Dungeons and Dragons, those types of games?
Well, we have to look first in the large picture that right now the attack is against the family. The devil is trying to destroy the family, and so it's a question of how he's going to do it. And he wants to infiltrate. And so what he's trying to do is to desensitize and to numb people to various things. So what might appear as something rather innocuous, like little Pokemon cards, which interestingly means pocket monster, they're little demons that they've made to look like cartoon characters. And it's filled with ideas of witchcraft and the like, but they make it look kind of nice. And parents don't seem to notice the problem. But that the people who make Pokemon cards actually are owned by the same parent company that makes Dungeons and Dragons. The idea is to get small children into role-playing ideas so that when they get older, they'll get into Dungeons and Dragons and then keep moving further. So there are lots of different things like this. Ouija boards, they sell it in the game section of a store. Mm-hmm. And so people think that this is a fun game. It's something purely demonic, but they present it as a game, so it's something that's fun. And people get hooked on this. They start looking for future things. So I always tell people, when you're asking questions about the future, mysterious sorts of things, the question can only be answered by one of two places, either God or the devil. And God does not answer on a game board. And so it's a matter of looking at things and understanding what the intent is. It's to numb people so that they don't notice that there are problems out there anymore.
What is the real draw for these kids to get into this stuff? What draws them?
Well, there's a curiosity always with the dark side, and there's that mysterious element. But ultimately, when you're dealing particularly with teenagers, the draw is power. Because kids feel powerless, and so they want power. Mm-hmm. And that's what these people offer them, is a sense of power.
Do you think it's fulfilling a need that these kids have that isn't being met in their life, or?
I think it's not so much that it's a need that's not being met, but I think it's a desire that's being presented to them. Mm-hmm. The music they listen to, the movies they watch, the violent video games, and all these different things that are presenting different things to them that are about, you know, personal power, it's selfishness and so on. And these kids feel helpless. They have to follow mom and dad's rules. They have to go to school and do what the teacher tells them to do and so on. That's not what they see being portrayed in Harry Potter, who can just take off and do what he wants, and where the parents are the bad guy. Or in some of the movies where you have kids just, you know, taking off and doing various things and they don't seem to have to do what mm-hmm. normal kids have to do. And these kids are drawn in by that, and they want to be a sense of freedom. But it's what the devil presents is not freedom, but it's really license that he's trying to present. But in America, we've mixed that up. Freedom means I can do whatever I want, and that's what the devil presents. Mm. And that's seen as a sense of power. I can do what I want. I make the decisions. I have the authority.
Father, in one of my son's high school graduation lock-ins, they had a hypnotist there. And I was the chaperone that night, and I watched the whole thing take place. And, of course, it was funny. They hypnotized, like, three boys, and they were it was funny that the things they were doing, everybody was laughing, but I know this isn't good. And can you please tell us what the danger is in that?
Well, first of all, to understand that is actually a mortal sin, according to the church. And the reason why the church presents it that way is because you are giving up your free will. Mm-hmm. If you're being hypnotized, you're handing over your free will to somebody else to manipulate you. And the fact is, while externally they may be doing some funny things, we don't know. If somebody is really smart enough to be able to manipulate the mind, they can be doing lots of things underneath to somebody who's hypnotized, while externally what the people in the audience who aren't educated in these things, what they see seems to be rather humorous. Mm-hmm. And so it can be really causing a lot of damage to that person. Mm-hmm. And just the fact of giving up the free will is terribly frightening.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is it's a growing problem, I think. I heard you talking about what witch covens there are now.
Well, right now in America there are over 250,000 registered witches. And they would be members of covens, and they would practice Wicca and witchcraft and so on. And people think that they talk about good witches and bad witches, and I'm sure these TV shows that are on are presenting good witches. There is no such thing as a good witch. There are three different levels of witchcraft becoming more and more evidently evil, but they're all witchcraft, and they're all evil. But the kids are being drawn into this. If you go to the library and you see the Harry Potter books, they actually have sections on sorcery for children and spells for kids and things like that. They have books that are out there presenting these things that are evil as a good.
Mm. Well, Father, like the Ouija board, for instance. I know I played it when I was a child, and I didn't believe it for a minute, but I know my kids have talked about some of their friends getting really freaked out by that thing. The devil can just, once they believe in it, then the devil takes over, things can really happen with that?
Things do happen with it. Most kids get scared by it and stop because they initially think that they're pushing the little thing. Mm-hmm, they'll ask a question like, who am I going to marry?
Exactly,
and they want to spell out their boyfriend's
right.
name.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden it starts going a different direction and spelling out a different name. And that's when they get scared, and most of them will drop it. But some of them get intrigued by that there's a power here, that's something beyond themselves and beyond their friends. And that's the thing, again, that's the way the devil works. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to understand. People, when they think about the devil, they think of this horrible, hideous, evil thing. But the devil doesn't present himself that way. He presents himself as a friend. He presents himself as somebody who's fun and exciting and you know, on a game board or on little cards of cartoon characters or whatever. Whatever is going to entice people is what he's going to do. He's trying to draw them in a very subtle manner.
Mm. Well, thank you very much, Father Altier. We have more to talk about on the show. It's very interesting, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Colleen.
The dangers of the occult are real, but can our children really be susceptible to them? When we come back, one young man's story of how he got lured into the occult and who pulled him out. Stay with us. Welcome back. We have been talking about the occult today and the ways in which it finds its way into our children's lives. Joining me now is Tony Juarez, who had experience with the occult firsthand. Tony, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks. Nice to be here.
Good. Tony, could you start by telling us what led you into the dabbling in the occult?
Well, I think since I was young, I was always interested in fantasy, either in movies or in books. But it wasn't until fifth grade when my brother brought home a Dungeons & Dragons rule booklet, and I was in the habit of sneaking into his room anyway, so I picked it up one day and started reading it, and before long we were playing. And it really became sort of an obsession. A typical New Year's Eve party for us was to play Dungeons & Dragons all night. When we didn't have friends to play Dungeons & Dragons with, it was almost at a loss for anything to do.
So this went on for a long period of time?
Long period of time. And you read certain things in there concerning the occult, either magic spells or monsters, that seem interesting. And lo and behold, there are bookstores in the Twin Cities area here that specialize in books dealing with those sorts of spells. And this, of course, I wanted to find out more about them, and me and a friend or other friends would go and look up these books in the store. And from there, it was just, it didn't take long before you're reading all sorts of these kinds of books, and before long, they shape your worldview.
So how old were you about that time when you first started getting into Dungeons and Dragons?
I believe I was in fifth grade. I don't know how old you are then. About 10 or 11, 10 or 11, and all the way up until about maybe 16 or 17 is when we finally quit playing. But the reading in the occultic material didn't end until much later, maybe 20, 21, somewhere around there.
So after the Dungeons and Dragons, there was more that pulled you in? You started reading books and...
Like I said, it begins to shape the way you see things, and you develop a fascination with it. And simply because you no longer play Dungeons and Dragons, that doesn't necessarily mean that the reading the occult will end as well either.
Mm-hmm. So what was the next big step for you then?
Well, the next big step was just to try dabbling in some of these spells and to try some of these things.
Did you realize you were getting pulled, or was it just kind of something that was very innocently happening? Or was there something about your life at that time, your family, anything that you felt this might be fulfilling a need that you had?
Well, I think it's important to realize that even though I was brought up Catholic, we were cultural Catholics. We weren't a very strong family. And when I was 9 years old, my parents got divorced, and each assumed the other would take my brother and I to church. Mm-hmm. And so, consequently, there wasn't much rearing in terms of the Catholic faith.
And so you weren't getting to Mass anymore,
no,
receiving the sacraments?
No. And not only that, but my mom worked long hours, and we only saw my dad on the weekends. And consequently, my brother and I ended up caring for ourselves a lot, and we brought ourselves up in a lot of respects. And we didn't get a whole lot of guidance in other respects of our lifestyle. So by the time that we did start playing Dungeons and Dragons, it was a natural choice just to say that, well, I'm old enough to make my own decisions, and I've been making decisions for myself now. Why not just keep reading into this? It seems like a satisfying worldview to me. Mm-hmm. So just.
So when you were about 16, you were really pretty heavy into Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
And things start happening in your life? I mean, were you were looking at the world differently, or?
It presents, the worldview presents itself as a sort of an outsider looking in. It's almost a sort of spiritual smugness that you know things that other people don't, and you could learn to cast spells and others. Other people are weak and you are strong because you can control the occult. It changes your worldview.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned something earlier to me about you started having some nightmares that were frightening to you.
After we began dabbling, my friend and mine, we tried casting some of these spells, and of course they would never work, at least not to our satisfactions. But you did begin to notice that there was a certain amount of separateness. Other people seemed to be separate from you. And about at that same time, I did begin having a recurring nightmare, not all the time, maybe like once every couple months, that definitely had the feeling of an eeriness that I was being visited, or I was being proffered to some sort of talk.
Oh, that must have been frightening.
Well, actually, through dabbling in the cult, you kind of tend to lose you become desensitized to that sort of aspect of fear, and it just becomes more unsettling than anything.
Okay.
You don't know enough to be afraid of that. And you just think, well, you just shrug it off, which just can be dangerous in itself too.
So what happened after that then? Did you find yourself being pulled out of it by some person or some way, or did you get into it deeper?
Well, one thing you'll find that when you're dealing with the occult is if you're looking for any sort of fulfillment other than power or acquiring power, you're going to be barking up the wrong tree. It wasn't until my dad died that I sought consolation and I sought some comfort that I realized that it wasn't fulfilling what I needed. It provided absolutely no answers and no help whatsoever in dealing with the emotions of the death of my father.
Mm.
And it was at that time that I began seeking out more traditional religious avenues. I wasn't back in the church yet, but I was exploring other other religions and try and moving back then. It wasn't until I went back to college later on. I had dropped out of college before, but now I'd gone back after a 3-year hiatus. And it wasn't until then that I had run into a professor there who, over lunch one day, brought me to start, or at least induced me to start thinking about the church again. And I remember getting into an argument with him, and he basically turned all of my suppositions of my worldview upside down flat and made me look kind of like a kid. It was after that that I began thinking that maybe what I had been putting into my mind, what I had been forming my worldview, was perhaps built of sand.
So I know, Tony, now you're well back into the Catholic faith.
And, oh, yes. And,
so what we have 30 seconds. What quick advice would you give to parents nowadays? I know you're a father of two young children. What would you tell them?
Number one, throw the TV away. There's very little, if anything, of redeeming value on it. Number two, spend time with your kids. Most parents have their kids doing things, activities that absolutely also have no redeeming value whatsoever. And number three, pray. I mean, sit down on the couch before everyone goes about their business for the evening and pray. That's it's remarkable what it can accomplish.
Well, thank you so much, Tony, for being here and sharing your experience with us. The dangers of the occult are very real, but what can parents do to protect their children? The answer when we come back. Discussing the dangers of the occult and the different ways it finds its way into the lives of our children, but I want you to know there is hope. I'd like to welcome back Father Robert Altier and also Phyllis Plum, Vice President of Catholic Parents Online, to discuss steps parents can take to protect their children from these very real dangers. Welcome, Phyllis, and welcome back, Father Altier.
Thank you.
Phyllis, as a parent of 10 children, could you give us some advice on what you would say or do for the kids that are being seduced into these games and things we've been talking about?
Well, first of all, for the parents, they should never close their eyes, they should never shut their ears, and never shut their mouth. Never sleep, keep all the doors and windows closed. There's danger lurking everywhere. The secret with the parents is to spend time with their children, and we hear that all the time. We tell each other that, we know that, but we must make time to do that. And when they start talking, we must listen. And there are different ways of listening, because if we really listen to them, one thing leads to another, and time is precious. We have them for such a short time, and they're going to slip away so quickly. And if we're not talking to them clearly about the truth, and Jesus is the answer, and if we know where we stand as parents on the truth line, which the Lord drew, and it's very straight and it's very narrow, but it's very safe. And if we know where we stand, then that standard will be passed down. There are so many trends out there that nab these kids, and they're the target as well they would be. They're so innocent. We're like birds in a nest, and these little birds, there comes a time when they've got to get out of the nest. Mm-hmm. And when they're down on the ground and they have yet to learn how to fly, they're very vulnerable. And television, we've talked about television, Tony mentioned it earlier too. There's a series coming up on television, the TV Weekly of the St. Paul paper. It's Witchblade. And of course, this young lady has an armor on her hand it's magic, it becomes armor, and then she uses that to bless.
To bless.
But I want to tell parents to go to Ephesians 6 and chapter 6 and read the verses 10 and thereon, that Lord God gave us armor. Now, if he gave us armor, Colleen.
Not that kind of armor.
Not this armor. Okay. No, this is magic armor. His armor is solid and true, and it works. And if he gave us armor, that means we're at war. That means we're warriors, and that means we have the enemy. And the enemy is real, and we've been talking, it's about Satan. And trends, if you want to know what trends are in trouble, read Deuteronomy 18. The Lord God listed them in the Old Testament, so there's nothing new under the sun. There's sorcery, casting spells, telling, fortune telling. Mm-hmm. We've got that in, well, the Harry Potter books. We've got them on the television programs. There's hardly any place you can go, whether it's even the newspaper, or every time you turn around, you have Deuteronomy 18 coming at these poor children. So we've got a big job on our hands. Mm. Truth is absolute, always has been. And most kids who are 30 and under, I'm not saying that. The Lord God said that. And I trust Him. And that's what parents need to do. We need to submit to Him. And then He gives us all the power and might necessary. But the truth remains absolute. And kids under 30, they'll argue with you about whether truth is absolute. And so that's the big issue.
But the fact that you're talking to them and you're telling them and you're the authority in their life at that time, they're going to listen to you and they're not going to be dragged off.
And so I love the little sign I have by my back door. What, and this is old, I know everybody knows it, but I love it. What part of no don't you understand?
Oh, I have that up too.
And when the children leave, I say, now, remember, I have said that, but remember when you're out there, you say that. Mm-hmm. Because there's many times you're going to have to say, no thank you. The temptations are at your fingertips, and the kids are vulnerable.
Thank you so much, Phyllis. Good advice. Father, could you tell us a little bit about what Catholic families should be doing and can be doing to help protect our kids?
Well, there are a few things. First and foremost, they need to be praying. We need to frequent the sacraments, particularly the Mass and confession. Mm-hmm. Families should be going to confession at least once a month, to make sure that they are in the grace of God, that they're removing any of the obstacles from their lives. And then the family prayer, the rosary, is very, very powerful. Families can pray the breviary, which is the psalms and so on. Lots of different prayers that are available. And then the sacramentals are so important. There are three sacramentals, actually, that are actually exercised, three things that we use. That's water and salt and oil. And so people should sprinkle holy water around their homes. Families, parents tell me that when things are getting chaotic in their home, they'll just take out the holy water and sprinkle it around and everything calms down. One can use blessed salt in food, in cooking, and you can put it in the salt shaker. Parents tell me their kids are much calmer when they use blessed salt. You can use blessed olive oil the same kind of way. There are also other sacramentals that are very powerful in dealing with the occult, things like St. Benedict medals, the Miraculous medal, the Green Scapular, and of course the most important and greatest, most powerful of all is the crucifix. And the devil can't stand the crucifix. So these are all things that can be done. The Green Scapular is just a little piece of cloth. It can be put between mattresses, it can be sewn into a shoe, it can be put in pillowcases, it can be slipped in without noticing it. And you can put St. Benedict medals or Miraculous medals above the doors or by the windows. Lots of things like that can be done.
You were talking earlier about how everyone puts up Viking posters and all these types of things, but people are afraid to put up holy pictures in their mm-hmm. home. I mean, they're kind of embarrassed nowadays. Or the devil loves the images just...
Exactly. The Satanists use images. You think of the things that have gone on these days with all these occult kinds of images, and now dragons are a big thing, and this false theology of angels, the New Age idea of angels is out there, and people are going crazy over these angels. That is not a Christian thing. And all the different diabolical images. And what we've done is remove the crucifixes in the pictures to put up secular things. And therefore, the homes don't have the protection that they need, and the people don't have the constant reminders of our Lord and our Lady to keep their minds where they belong.
Well, thank you so much, Father and Phyllis, for being with us today. Well, we've certainly covered a lot of ground today, but I think the message is clear. Parents need to be vigilant about what their children are reading, watching, and playing. Parents, please don't be misled into thinking that the occult isn't real or doesn't present a danger to your children. Be sure to always provide a solid Catholic foundation for your children so that none of these so-called fantasies actually begin to seem real for your children and lure them off into the occult. God gave us the right and the responsibility to guide our own children in holiness. We'd love to hear from you. If you have comments, questions, or even suggestions for future shows, please contact Catholic Parents Online by calling us at 952-882-6704 or visiting our website at www.catholicparents.org. Thank you for watching, and God bless you and yours.